Today on the Profitable Tradie podcast.
Everybody who's grown a massive business has experienced that fear, and they stayed committed to their goal of growth, and the fear will not necessarily go away, but you know that you can get through it. There's a plan.
On today's episode, I interview Mike Cournier from Bronson Johnson Seamless Eaves Troughs in Ottawa. Now, Mike is a member of our Million Dollar Tradie program. He's an energetic and dynamic business owner, and he's made some massive changes to his business and his life over the last 18 months, despite some tough economic times. Now, his journey has been packed with challenges, and he's pushed through, and it's seriously motivating.
You know, the one thing that's not measurable is the biggest thing for me right now is confidence. Okay, so I know where I'm going. I know exactly what I'm doing, and all of my decisions have intent.
Now, don't miss this episode, as Mike has some great insights around what it really takes to grow a thriving business and also to build a life that you love. Now, they say success leaves clues, and on today's episode, I interview Mike Cournier. Now, welcome, Mike. I'm super excited to have you here, mate. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited, too. Thank you for inviting me in.
This is going to be fun because you've been doing some really cool stuff, and I really want to, you know, get into that and sort of talk about where you were, where you are now, and then I think there's been some really cool lessons that and wins that you've had that we could maybe share with the listeners, and that'll help them, you know, grow their businesses as well, which I think will be fun. But to kick off, I was looking back on the notes. I think you joined the Million Dollar Tradie Program in about August 24. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So what I'd love to do, Mike, in your own words, why was it important for you to make changes and get some help when you did?
Okay, well, this isn't something I talk about very often, but this is how I realized I needed to make changes, Tony. On March 25th, 2024, I brought my wife into the hospital because she had a really bad headache. Turns out, 7 hours later, she's in emergency brain surgery. They're removing a golf ball-sized tumor from her brain. And the doctor said we were less than a millimeter away from a catastrophic event. So we know what that means, wow. Right?
Yeah.
So over the next couple months, you know, we worked really hard on recovery. I was with her a lot, took me away from the business. And I realized I need to make some changes in my life. Something had to change, right? And so I enrolled in a 2-day course that helped me plan the next 10 years. That was the goal. And part of that 10-year plan was to sell my business. And so I got going on it. And in the summer of 2024, I had my business evaluated, and I discovered that it wasn't worth anything because it was basically a one-horse pony show. Everything was in my head. It wasn't sellable. And so, you know, for me, that was devastating. That was demotivating. I couldn't believe it. All these years, all this blood, sweat, and tears, and nobody wants to buy it. Like, what do you mean? You know, so I said, all right, I need some help. So I interviewed and searched out various coaching programs. And when I came across Profitable Tradie, I knew it was the right thing. It was head and shoulders above everything else. What you've and your team have developed is like second to none out there. And that's why I joined. And that was the kickoff of my growth to today.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough realization, isn't it? Particularly with such a challenging event, you know, as the illness. Just so the listeners know, can you tell us about how your business looked when you joined? You know, what type of work you were doing, who you were helping, the team, the revenue, the profitability, all of that sort of thing.
Okay. So before I joined, you know, it was basically me, and I controlled a lot of the things. I wasn't really on the tools, but I was spending a lot of my time managing the crew. I only had one crew. We installed eaves troughs, soffit, fascia. Our average job size was about $3,800. My son was working for me. We had three guys, two of them were full-time, a couple part-time guys. My revenue was about $500,000 a year, and my margins were about 10%. So, and it was seasonal. So every December, on December 31st, I wanted to have $50,000 in the bank. And that let me live through January, February, and part of March. And then we'd shut down for the winter and kind of just lick our wounds from the crazy ride of the wintertime or of this or of the summertime.
Yeah, yeah. So I know that you had that event, but how were you feeling about the business even before that medical event?
I was feeling pretty good about it, you know? I mean, I thought I was building something that somebody would want. I mean, I had a pretty good life, you know? I took a couple months off. I was paying all my bills. I was helping my kids get through school. I mean, my wife, you know, she had a job too. It was pretty good. It was actually not bad, you know?
And isn't it interesting how sometimes we don't actually realize the situation we're in until we have something that really shocks us and helps us see what's really going on?
No, exactly. Right. Like everything was going well until it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the experience for a lot of business owners. So let's fast forward to where we are now. So how does the business actually look now? Where are you at now with, you know, revenue, team, profitability, what you're doing in the business?
Okay, so it's night and day for me. You know, I have a salesperson and he's out doing the sales. I have an office admin and she looks after a lot of the phone calls. She looks after her. She's like, doing all, she's traffic control. She's making sure that all the traffic is going where it should go. I have two crews out in the field, gearing up to have a third crew this spring. We're no longer just a seasonal business, which was really exciting for me this year. We started a whole new product, a whole new product line, a new service that we offered here in Ottawa during the wintertime. I'm expecting to hit 750 to 800,000 this year. And, you know, with some great profits, we're running a gross profit margin of probably around on average 50 to 52% if we keep going on what we did last year. And, you know, these are all logistic. These are all measurable things, Tony. And, you know, the one thing that's not measurable, but I think is the biggest thing for me right now is confidence. Okay. So I know where I'm going. I know exactly what I'm doing. And all of my decisions have intent. And, you know, that helps a person sleep well at night.
Can you talk to us a little bit more about that confidence and the intent that you now feel?
Working with the coaches, we've identified our big rocks and we've identified our smaller rocks and our sand. And I know what my big rocks are to get me to the next stage. And so I focus on those big rocks. And because for the last 18 months, we've done this sort of process where we identify my big rocks, go in 6-week intervals, and we get them done. Because I've done this so many times, I'm confident that as I'm moving forward, I'm going to continue to build just like I have been in the last 18 months. The proof that it's been working leads me to feel confident that it's going to continue to work and get me to my ultimate goals. Does that make sense?
Yeah, total sense. And if you're listening, we're talking about big rocks and little rocks and sand. What we're talking about here is planning, really. And it's about having a clear plan on what you need to work on next in your business based on the situation you find yourself in. And the big rocks are those really important chunky things that you need to do to actually move the ball down the field or get things into the scoring zone. And very often in business, we get so consumed by doing the stuff that we need to do every day that we really don't even know what we should focus on to improve the business. It's a little bit like a Groundhog Day type thing because we're just kind of going through the motions. And I think you're 100% right. If you know what you need to focus on to grow, that does build confidence and that intent builds confidence. And confidence makes all the difference because then you've got hope and you feel inspired and you're lifting the horizons of where you're heading rather than just being trapped in that kind of level of thinking that you already had. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you. You know, Tony, it's so easy to get trapped in when you don't have that direction and that coaching. It's so easy to get trapped in the day to day and you just, you know, you can't see your way out. You're just in so deep, you know?
Yeah. And it's a really real problem. I think we've all experienced that. It's just hard to see what's ahead. And because you're so stressed a lot of the time, your brain is actually in that kind of crazy fight or flight response. And you're not even able to think big picture and strategically because it's really about survival a lot of the time.
Right, right.
That's a tough place to be.
Yeah. And that place that you're talking about right there, that's where I was when my wife got sick. I was in survival mode. You know, maybe the years before everything was pretty comfortable, but when things went sideways, I went into this fight or flight mode that you just described. And like, I can't even tell you how stressful it was. And you know, I felt like I needed a way out, right? I needed some help.
And the tough thing is when you're in that situation, and like I said, we've all been there, is you actually can't think straight.
Not at all.
And so it's the time when you need to be able to think the straightest, and it's the time when you are least able to do that. It's a bit cruel.
Yes.
But that's what happens. So what have the results from the business meant for you?
I think that right now, I'll tell you what I'm really learning is that because of all of these things that we've implemented, I'm more present in life. If anybody's out there listening and you're struggling, you know that sometimes your kids or your wife are talking to you and you're looking at their face, but guess what? You're running the numbers in the back of your head. You're wondering if the guys are going to show up on time. Is the schedule right? Do I have all the inventory? You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden they say something and you just go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's a great idea, right?
And I've never done that.
So you know, the biggest thing for me is that's gone away now. I'm a lot more present, and it's very, very cool. Like everybody, there's a lot of accountability out there now for the crew. Right. I know somebody's got the inventory. There's a checklist out there and everybody has their job, and we've hired people that want to do that job. So guess what? I'm now, you know, I'm here talking with you and you got all my attention. I'm not thinking about anything else. And that happens with my kids and my brother and my wife and everything now. So it's a pretty big deal for me. Be present like that.
That's a definite blessing, yeah. And it's very hard for a lot of business owners because the demands are so all-consuming. It's not like having a job. And if stuff's going to happen, it's up to you.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just you. And I think, as you said, building that team out makes a huge difference. The systems, yeah, the people you can rely on is massive. So, Mike, what do you like to do for fun?
Oh, that's – I like to do a lot of things for fun. You know, one of the main – my big thing is fishing. I will go fishing with my kids, with my wife, with my brother, with my niece and my nephew, whoever wants to get in the boat, I'll go fishing with them. So that's one of the things. I also like hunting. I have a bow and I like bringing my dinner home with me if I can. Poker nights with my friends. You know, my wife and I were making a list the other day. It came up in a Q&A at a Profitable Trading to talk about what do you like doing the most. And so her and I were having that conversation. And you know what I identified is I like having dinner or a nice meal. Let's say a meal. Doesn't have to be a nice meal. A meal with the people I care about, where I'm present. We're sitting around, we're talking, laughing, we're eating something. That's a great feeling for me.
I love it. I love fishing as well. Haven't done much this season, unfortunately, but hoping to get someone real soon. The right. boat has not actually been out of the shed this season, which is very concerning.
Yes, yes.
Anyways, I was away, in fairness, I was away overseas for about 4 weeks, so in the prime time. But anyway, there we go. Man, you've made lots of changes. And what I'd love to do, Mike, is just focus on a few that I think have made a huge difference, you know, just so we can share some wisdom with the listeners as well. So for you, what are the two things that made the biggest difference?
I'm going to say the task analysis and the default calendar.
So let's dig into task analysis. Can you just talk us through what that means, what that process is?
So this is where it all started. This is something that our coaches had me do right from the beginning, where I would document what I did for 2 weeks. And it turns out that I have basically my 9 functions that I carry out in my life. You know, I sleep, I eat, spend time with my wife. And then there's some work-related things, of course, right? How much time did I spend on my marketing tasks? How much time did I spend on my sales tasks? How much time did I spend on my admin tasks? So we documented all that for 2 weeks. And then you sit down and you analyze it. And you say, oh, okay, here's what I'm doing with my time. Should I be doing those things with my time? What else can I be doing with my time? That's where the task analysis, that's how the task analysis worked for me.
What were some of the aha moments when you looked at that?
You know, Tony, I'm not going to say that I was really shocked as much as to say that I had a revelation when I looked at these numbers. The revelation was, it's easy for me to now see why I wasn't able to grow my business. Because nowhere in there was tasks that I was working on growing my business, right? So there it was, right in front of me. No column said, work on growing your business. So of course it didn't happen.
The thing about time is we don't typically think is, it's like anything, if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. And so measuring it gives you a stock take of where your time's going. Because if you want different results in your life, you need to take some different action to get those different results. And that requires you to spend time in different areas.
Yep.
And I think your revelation there is one that so many people have. And I think another one they have is also that my time is jammed up with low value admin, mucking around, stuff that really annoys me, stuff that I can probably pay someone else to do that's sucking the life out of me and my business, is another big realization.
Exactly. Once I made the decision that I had to start giving time, or in, I should say investing time into growing my business, I could just look at that calendar and plunk out and go, there's an easy 8 hours right there. Easy in admin work that I'm doing. I can hire somebody to do that. You know, it was right there in front of me, plain as day.
Yeah, so let's talk about the default calendar.
So the natural progression from once you know your tasks, once you know what you've been doing with your time, let's actually rearrange it into blocks that are more manageable and more effective. And so that's the default calendar. And so that's where I took a look at what I was doing and how I can do it better. And so, as I mentioned, I had to dump a bunch of tasks so that I could make time for growing my business. And so it just made sense that I was going to dump a whole bunch of admin tasks and hire an admin person to do all those for me. And it's amazing how once we hired her, I could just give her more and more and more, and it freed up more and more of my time, and life got better and better. It was like magic, but I know it wasn't magic because the coaches told me this would happen.
But it's a challenge though, isn't it? Because it's like, well, okay, I think I can keep an admin person busy for 8 hours a week. What are they going to do for the rest of the time? And I've got to pay for them, and how am I going to afford it? But I think, as you say, we have this experience with thousands of people, is they get busy very quickly. Within a short period of time, you're like, far out, they're almost too busy. How did I even cope?
You're 100% right. That's kind of where I am right now. You know, the admin's like, wow, I thought you hired me part-time here a little while ago. Yeah, well, now you're full time.
That's right. So that default calendar is crucial. It's almost like I think of it like a budget for your time. You're basically saying, this is where I'm going to invest my time, and these are the things that are important to me as a person and as a business owner. And your default calendar will include, you know, time to work on the business to improve it, but it can also include, you know, time to have lunch with your wife, date nights, gym time, fishing time, golf time, all the things that if you don't block them in, never happen. Because if it's not in your calendar at the start of the week, it's not happening. Because all the other stuff will just crowd in. The urgent jobs, the issues that pop up with running a business, which always pop up. That calendar is like you put the big rock in there that pushes the other stuff aside. So you actually end up focusing on the stuff that really moves the needle forward.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. You have to plan it first. And so with my wife, we sit down and work on my default calendar. Sundays we do it, and we pick our time in that calendar. And then it happens because we put it in there. We chose what to do and we put it in there. And you know, something else I've noticed about blocking time is that when you block that time and your team knows that that's your time, they're not bugging you, because you say, hey, look, I'm working on a marketing strategy so we can all be busy in 6 weeks from today. Don't bug me during that time. And that means when you're working on marketing strategies, you're 100% focused on it and you do a way better job.
Focus is so critical. It's very difficult as a business owner because you've got so many demands. So if you can shut your brain off from everything else and just focus on one thing, you do a better job. You're 100% right on that. That's a great insight. So one thing I love, Mike, is the way you've worked on the profitability, the cash flow and all that sort of thing. So I'd love to just dig into that a bit. What did you do to improve the profitability of the business?
There's so many things that you can do, right? That's why we work. We work for the profit. We work so that we have the money to do the things that we love to do with the people that we love, right? So profitability started for me, like, knowing my numbers. It's hard to make any decisions when you don't know your numbers. You mentioned this before about if you measure it, you can manage it. Just because I used to in the past, if I looked at my bank account, there was money in there, I felt good about myself. There was money in there. But what I quickly realized is that at the end of the year, you might not have any money in there if you're not managing your profitability. That's all about your cash flow. You have to start managing your cash flow. You have to pay attention to your cash flow.
What are some of the specific strategies that you've looked at to actually improve those margins and the profitability in the business?
Back costing is so key. And it's not back costing once in a while. It's back costing all the time, every time. And you make it part of the business so that you know what jobs are profitable jobs. You know how to make a job more profitable if it's not profitable. You know what customers maybe are not profitable and you don't want to work for them. That was the big one for us, I think, was the back costing of all of our jobs.
Yeah, it's critical, isn't it? And I think the whole point of doing a job is to make money. But if you don't measure it, it's amazing how many jobs don't make money. And in fact, if you think about a gross margin, you know, maybe your gross margin's 40%. That's an average, you know, if you look at your P&L. But there will be a lot of jobs that are 23% or 18% or 32%. And they're the ones that really actually cost you your money and they waste your time. And they're typically for clients who are frustrating. And so when you identify those, you have a massive increase in profitability by just removing those and looking for some more of the jobs that actually look like the ones that make profit. It's actually really simple and incredibly effective when you do it. But as you said, you got to do it every time. And I think that's the discipline. We find this is a little secret from the coaching world is people will start doing this and get really excited about it. Their business grows, they get busy, and then 6 or 8 months down the track, their margins are not quite as good. And it's like, how's your back costing going? Yeah, good. Oh, well, you know, are you doing it regularly? Yeah. Are you doing it every time? Nah. Like, okay, let's go back to basics, because that's what business is about. You know, just doing the basics well for a long period of time is how you crush it in business.
We fell into that trap a little bit. You know, we were doing it and we were like, oh, wow, look at how much we're learning. And then we stopped for maybe a few weeks. It wasn't even a few weeks. And all of a sudden, I felt all out of sorts. I was like, I don't know my numbers anymore. We got to get back in this, everybody. So making sure that the crew is communicating with everybody else so that we know exactly what it costs us to get those jobs done. So
yeah,
it's important.
It's massive. Yeah, so that was just a little bit of coaching there, mate. Just a bit of a stay on track, brother.
Thank you. Thank you.
No problem. It's a pleasure. Hey, Mike, I love the work you've done on team culture and performance, all that sort of thing. So why is culture being important to focus on for you?
Culture's everything in a business, you know. When you have a great culture, you can recruit great people. You can retain great people. And you can have great results, because when everybody's rowing in the same direction, it's amazing how much more you can get done when the culture is all there and everybody's enjoying what's going on. Culture to me is just so huge.
It's like the secret sauce, isn't it? That just makes all the difference. And it does take some investment and time for sure.
Yeah.
What I'd love to dig into, Mike, is what are some of the things, you know, from a like a practical perspective that you've done that have helped build the culture of the business?
First thing is we identified our purpose and we identified our core values as a company. And that helps define your culture, and it gives you the guide rails to keep everything in check as you're growing and as you're hiring. And so one of the things that we do, I mean, we do so many things, because you got to keep culture alive. It can't just be on a piece of paper. It has to be alive. And so one of the things that we do is every Monday we have a staff meeting. It doesn't last long, but we start off the meeting by going around the table and everybody has to give somebody else some sort of compliment and relate it back to one of the core values in the business. And that's been a lot of fun. And who doesn't like to hear something good about what they did last week on a Monday morning? That's one thing. It's in our job descriptions. We put our core values and our purpose in our job descriptions. When we're hiring people and we're interviewing, we ask them to talk about one of our core values and how it relates to their life and how and why they identified with that core value. When I'm handing out a compliment during the week, or if I catch somebody living the core value, I might put it in my WhatsApp chat. I might say it, you know, just keeping it alive again, what we're doing. One of our core values is to have a humble sense of responsibility in our community. And so the team gets together every year and they come up with something we're going to do in the community. One of the ideas on the table right now is called Bronson's Blankets. It gets cold here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And so there's enough homeless people that need clean blankets, and we're going to work with a local church. And so every day when we're at a job site, we're going to let the homeowners know, hey, do you got any spare blankets? We're going to clean them up and we're going to deliver them on the coldest nights in Ottawa. Clean out one of our cube vans and it's all filled with shelves and we're going to go deliver them. And so, you know, that's how we're going to keep it alive. It's going to be almost a reminder every day when part of our checklist is to ask for the blankets for the church that we're going to work with.
I love the way you're keeping it alive, because culture is powerful. It does need to be written down, but that's only the start. That's kind of like the outline.
Yeah.
I love that you do those appreciations. We do that in our team meeting here as well. There's like 40, 50, 60, 65 people in this team meeting, and we all have to say an appreciation for another person in the team and what value that relates to. And it's fantastic.
That's spectacular.
And it's great, isn't it? It just you feel really good about that. And it has the effect of getting those values deeper and deeper into people. And I think you mentioned about the hiring, it becomes very clear very quickly people who fit and people who don't fit. They just kind of feel awkward and look like they don't match with the culture, and your whole hiring process becomes about getting people who fit those values as well. So we're all rowing in the same direction, which I think is a great analogy for how culture works. So yeah. Hats off to you for that work. That's killer.
Thank you.
And your team talk about it too, don't they? They're like, you get other people wanting to work for you because they're like, well, this is actually different, because most people don't really do culture very well. Really?
Yeah, it's true. They do talk about it. And we have a saying, you know, when you know your core values, it's easy to make a decision, because it fits into the culture of everything happening around you in the business, right from hiring somebody to what are you going to do up on the ladder when nobody's watching you?
And that is culture, exactly. It's what people do when they're not being watched. That's a great way to kind of talk about it, because it's what they sort of internalize and how they motivate themselves from the inside, not the outside. So that's actually a really good shout. I like that. Okay, culture. Let's talk about structure for a minute. How important has been building the organization structure for your growth and also for your enjoyment of the business yourself?
Building the structure is paramount. Knowing the roles that have to be filled is paramount for so many reasons. One of them is, as we're growing and everyone can see the roles that need to be filled, and there's a path to get there, right? So as we grow, somebody can say, well, I can see myself in that role over there. And that's fun to imagine yourself growing in the company and taking on one of those roles. Another thing that's great about structure, that's paramount about having the structure, is that we need to identify who's responsible for what in the business. When you know what you're responsible for, and you have a job description, and you have KPIs, and you're being measured, you're talking about your role, and you hire people, and they know what their role is, it all comes together. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing because they know their role, and they know where they fit in the whole organization, right? They know what their contribution is to the big picture and to the team and to that culture, and to make everybody else in the team successful, they've got to do their role.
It's a big challenge for businesses where owners are working in them, and sometimes with family as well or whatever. People aren't clear on who's their boss sometimes. You know, if you've got other managers in the team, they, instead of reporting to the operations manager or the foreperson or whatever, the boss, the owner comes in and kind of cuts through things and messes it up, yeah. You know, that sort of thing. And structure is really important for that, because otherwise you completely cut the legs off of the people you've put in place to actually manage stuff. And that sort of buggers things up a bit.
On that point, structure was important for me, because there it was in the chart. Mike, you don't go and tell that person what you think is the right way to do it. Okay, that's not you anymore. That's their role. That's their job. Talk to them. Talk to that direct report to you. So,
and that's tough, isn't it? Like, it's hard as an owner. How have you dealt with that from a mental or emotional point of view, where you've got to let other people take responsibility and sometimes make mistakes?
Oof, yeah, that's a hard one. That's hard. Basically, I've had to tell myself I need to let the people that I hired do their job, because we've deemed that they're capable of doing it, and I need to get out of their way. I have to have the mindset that, you know what, they're going to make mistakes. I made mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. My job is to coach them and mentor them, because if I keep jumping in there all the time, then guess what? all those blocks I have in my default calendar are going to get eaten up with them coming to ask me questions, you know, them not having the confidence to do what they need to do. I had to change my mindset to say, look, I'm a mentor and a coach, and we're going to make mistakes. We're all going to make mistakes, and let's not try to hide them and bury them. Let's all learn from them, and let's work together here. And that comes to culture too, right? You're not yelling at the guy that makes the mistake. You might bring it up and not in a negative way. And the team gets to talk about it, and the team can maybe provide some insight for that person who made their mistake. That mental mindset to let people do their job. You just have to do it. I think my coach said to me, if you can pay somebody $40 an hour, Mike, you shouldn't be doing it. Ask yourself that when you jump in to do something. I still use that today.
I like that. And the thing is that we didn't start out perfect either. Like, I think sometimes as owners, we think we were born perfect. But newsflash, we weren't. And we've made mistakes. We've had to learn. And we've probably made more mistakes than a lot of people. That's why we've done more learning. So I think that's the first thing. They will make mistakes. The second thing is, you know, you go to the gym, you need resistance. You've actually got to lift weights to get stronger. And if you let the weight of responsibility rest on people's shoulders, they will get stronger. But if you don't, they stay weak. And you do not want weak leaders and weak supervisors in your business, because they're the people you rely on so that you can actually create a lifestyle that you want and grow the business and improve the profitability. So I think that's a great insight. Yeah, you got to let them get strong. And if they don't get strong and they keep messing it up, it's okay. Maybe they're not the right person for the role. And sometimes you won't get it right the first time. And that's okay. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It just means you didn't get it right. And you've got some more work to do as well. Maybe it's another learning as a business owner. So your daughter, Justina, is an important part of the business. Love to just touch on this a little bit. So what's been the hardest part and the best part about having, you know, a child and family involved in the business?
Oh, Tony, I love having Justina on the crew. You know, she's amazing. And the hardest part about working with Justina is for me to remember my role. Just like what we were talking about like a couple minutes ago, is I'm the owner. And my role in the business is to coach her in her role in the business. That's a little bit hard for me to do sometimes because, you know, I'm the dad. That's so right. But I can't be the dad who's trying to protect his little girl all the time. I have to remember that she needs mentoring and coaching. She needs to fall down, just like we just said, and she needs to get up and she needs to try again. That's probably the hardest part of working with Justina. Probably the and without a doubt the best part is I talk to her every day. That's so special for me to be a dad and to get to talk to her and watch her over the last 6 years develop into this incredibly competent and confident human being who has so many skills she learned in this business that she's going to get to take on, and they're going to be with her forever. And this business actually was there to help her develop these skills. And so when I talk to her every day and I always think about that, that's the best part of it. It really is. I'm just so proud of her.
Yeah, I think it's people talk about this, having family involved in business, and it can go one of two ways. If you do it properly, it can be an incredible blessing. And that's with good structure, the right people doing things that suit their skills, because you're actually, as a family, working on a common goal. You're building each other up and you're spending time with someone you care about, but also building something you care about as well together. And it actually can be amazing.
Yes.
If it's the right situation. So I think that's epic. And I can tell that you're a proud dad, which is even better. and that's amazing, isn't it? It's so good. Hey, do you have any advice for people who are thinking about working with their kids, how they make that work?
That's a great question, because it's paramount. I worked for my dad growing up. And so I had a little bit of experience in that. Advice that I give people when they want to work with their kids is you need to set expectations from the start. Okay. You're the parent, but at work, you have a job to do as the owner of the business, and you have to let your kid know they also have a job to do, and they're going to be held accountable for the job that you're going to give them. They have to talk to you, and you know, you got to set these expectations. You can't talk to me like we're at the dinner table. You have to talk to me like the other people around you talk. Watch how they talk to me, mimic them, right? You got to coach your kids. Your kids aren't naturally good employees of their parent. Okay. You've got to coach them and mentor them. That's one thing. The thing that I think is the most important advice that I give to people is leave work at work. Don't bring it home, because then it just never leaves and you never get to just talk to them about regular old life. And that was one of the hardest things for me to do, is just leave work at work, because you have to remember the relationship between you and your kid is way more important than that job or that business. So if things start to go sour, end it soon, because you do not want to get into a situation where you risk damaging that relationship. Because I've seen that between parents who hired their kids, and now all of a sudden Christmas dinner is ruined because you're uncomfortable at the table. Don't let it get there.
That's great advice. Clear expectations and make sure that it's working. You touched on the seasonal nature of the business. So how do you deal with it? Obviously, it's pretty cold and you were pretty much shut down there for a while, but you've done some interesting stuff there. So I know this is a challenge for a lot of people, you know, up in the north, that can really, you know, provide some challenges for business.
So we identified that in order for us to create this business that's going to be someday sellable, we had to get rid of this slow time. We had to keep everybody busy. We had to keep cash flow coming in. And so we came up with an idea to keep us busy during the winter that was complementary to the business that we're currently do, which is eavesdrop, soft, and fascia. So to deal with, and we learned so much. Wow, I can't believe how much I learned about marketing when we launched this, and how much Profitable Tradie helped us get this off the ground this year, you know? And so one of the big things that I learned about seasonality of businesses is that when you've identified where the dip is going to be in your income or in your flow, let's say your workflow, then you start marketing weeks in advance, because the marketing that we did 6 weeks ago, maybe even 8 weeks ago, is what's going to give us the work today. So identify where the seasonality is or where the dips are and work toward those. Figure out what's going to work in that slow time for whatever reason, you know, and you've got to get creative. And that's sort of what we did.
Yeah, I think this is a big lesson for just marketing in general. Your lack of work problem today is a marketing problem 6 to 8 weeks ago, or whatever the cycle time of your type of work. And if it's large construction, obviously it'll be longer because the pricing and the quoting bidding takes longer. So that's a very powerful insight to get busy earlier. So yeah, that's super, super helpful. Let's talk about mindset, Mike. That's a big part of growth. So what are the mindset changes that you've made to achieve the success and the growth that you've had?
Okay, so I would say that my biggest mindset was having a commitment to growth. Growth anywhere in life, in business, in your personal life, it can be painful. And it's difficult to change, right? It's so hard to do. When something is hard to do or it's painful, there's fear attached to that. And so when I say my mindset change was the commitment to growth, what I'm saying is that commitment is the bridge over the fear to growth. Staying committed to growth bridges the fear and gets rid of it.
What has helped you build that commitment?
The community at Profitable Tradie and my coach at Profitable Tradie, because I know where I want to be in 10 years. And you have to just understand that fear is there for everybody when you're growing. It's real. Everybody who's grown a massive business has experienced that fear, and they stayed committed to their goal of growth. And so when you hear that enough times in the people that you surround yourself in Profitable Tradie and the coaches, you know, that it gets ingrained into your head, stay committed, and the fear will not necessarily go away, but you know that you can get through it. There's a plan.
The confidence that you talked about earlier is massive. And fear is always there to an extent. And if there's no fear, it means you're not actually trying anything. And that, I think that's how some people stay small, is like, well, I can't handle fear, so I won't go there. But that's why their life or their business really doesn't grow. And then they have another frustration 10, 15 years down the track because they're not where other people are and they get resentful. So you can choose fear now or resentment later or disappointment later. They're kind of similar emotional downers, but they have different outcomes. So I think that's very, very insightful. How important has been getting some outside help for you, Mike?
Huge. I needed some outside help. And as I just mentioned, the community of profitable trading, having peers that I can talk to and that I can ask questions. We can sit in together on Q&As and we can bounce ideas off of each other. That has massive value. When you're going it alone and things get tough and you feel like you're all alone, that's where that community really comes in, you know, and that's where that outside help comes in. And it's important to know that you have that support and you can reach out to people and get the advice you need. And so that's the peer portion of it. But also the coaching portion of it is massive too, because the coaches are there for you. It's amazing to me, Tony, what you guys have built, a team, talk about culture. The coaches, they really want to see us succeed. Like it's almost like it's their business. They're that invested into seeing each and every one of us succeed. And so, and they're working hard in the back to do it too. I know you know it, but I'm just saying from my experience, like the coaches are so amazing and the help that they've provided is just, can't say enough. I really can't.
Yeah, they're amazing humans and they do care deeply as well. I'm very appreciative of the work that they do and the impact that they make. It's quite humbling and you feel very grateful to have people of that caliber on your team. And that's what it's all about. Mike, this has been amazing. Like some absolute gold here that we've talked about. I think the exciting thing for you is you've made an amazing start, but I think with the energy you're bringing and the foundations you've laid, actually the best is yet to come for the business as well. And for me, that's super exciting. So hats off to you, man. Let's keep crushing it. It's been fun hanging out today. I really appreciate your time and your insights.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. And once again, thank you for taking the time with me. This has been amazing.
So good, man. Take good care, man.
Okay, you too.
Next week on the Profitable Tradie Podcast.
One of the most uncomfortable conversations a business owner can have is, hey, boss, can we chat about my pay? Now your stomach tightens, you start calculating margins in your head, you wonder about whether they're going to quit, you feel cornered, and sometimes you think, how am I supposed to pay more when I'm already not making any money? And here's the kicker, how you handle this conversation will either build loyalty and performance in your team, or it'll create resentment, entitlement, and possibly leave to team members leaving. Now tune into today's episode where we dig into how to handle pay discussions properly without overpaying, underpaying, or losing your best people.
Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of The Profitable Tradie Podcast.